What is up, everybody? We're back with the Sharp Angles podcast. I'm Raymond Summerlin. We took a week off after free agency week. We decided that we had done enough in free agency week, the wildness that was that week. We've decided to take a week off, but we're back. And we're actually going to keep talking about free agency. And I'm going to do that here with the one, the only Rich Rebar. How you doing, my friend?
We're doing good, man. It's, you know, we're coming into April, big draft month. We're already starting to see some of like the draft smoke. I can't wait to get into the weeds of some of these the last 4 weeks. You know, will J.J. McCarthy get his way? And will the Bears start considering J.J. McCarthy at pick one?
No, that's where we're headed. My favorite thing about that, yeah, the smoke screen is like, oh, I don't know. J.J. McCarthy's going to go two. J.J. McCarthy's going to go three. But nobody even – Caleb Williams is minus 10,000 to go first, and no one's even playing about it. They're like, no, he's just going to be the number one pick. And then we can start playing our games with these picks after it. But I mean, it'll be fun. What I'll say, I've said this before, Ryan McChrystal, our very own Ryan McChrystal, said when the first podcast I did with him about the draft, which was the week after the Super Bowl, he said that y'all are going to be shocked by how high J.J. McCarthy ends up in the draft. He said it a long time ago, and the drumbeat that we have seen has been consistent. Will he be second or third? I don't know about that, but are the Vikings going to trade up for him into the top 10? It seems likely. You're actually going to do some podcasts. You're going to do a quarterback podcast with Ryan next week. We have a bunch of podcasts coming up in April. Rich is going to do a Dynasty Rookie series for fantasy with some really good guests, including Ryan. We have a best ball announcement next week. We're going to do a draft preview. We're going to do draft props. There'll be a team needs episode of the podcast. There's a ton coming up over these next several weeks. So make sure you subscribe to the Sharp Angles podcast and leave it there. I do want to talk about team needs a little bit because that's what you and I are now in the weeds of. Every year at Sharp Football Analysis, we write a team need series. We write every single team, offense, defense. It's really comprehensive. Rich is doing the offenses. I'm doing the defenses this year. And I decided to go in draft order. So we're starting with like the Panthers and the Commanders and the Patriots. And I might be regretting that looking at having to start this, you know, this arduous process of 32 teams, having to start with these teams that are picking at the top of the draft, or unfortunately in the Panthers' case, not picking, but at least earned the number one pick at the top of the draft for a reason. It's kind of soul crushing, Rich. I won't lie to you about it.
I mean, it is one of those things. Anytime you start anytime I've been in the industry, anytime you try to do everything that's every team based, it always sounds like better in theory. Like when you're in the middle of the process and you're like, oh wow, I still have 12 teams left, 14 teams left. So it always does end up being a lengthy process. But also, like, since we've been doing these the last 4 years, I actually do enjoy these because it kind of sets the table of like, I get like the full on grasp of like exactly where these teams are in terms of depth and personnel. And it kind of like really illuminates a lot of stuff that kind of moves forward for the summer, maybe like for my drafting in terms of depth and stuff like that for roster spots, getting just a lay of the land of the complete team aspect of it. So that it is a good thing too, as well.
Yeah, no, I did the fantasy team previews for the website last year. And that was my takeaway as well, is that it's just, you have such a, you know, we tend to focus on fantasy on players, right? And we focus on players and those players. Today, we're going to talk about players. But I know you're a big proponent of this. I've always been a proponent of this. Every time I've done projections, it's always been team down. That team environment is such an important aspect that often gets lost. And, you know, people want to talk about, is player A better than player B? Well, the team environment is going to play a big role in whether that's the case in fantasy. And so I do think these team by team looks at them are very helpful, but your point about it always sounds better before you do it. I find that I talk to myself in eighths. So every four teams I do, oh, well, that's an eighth of it down. And that makes my brain a little bit happier. Then I get eight done. I'm like, oh, we're a fourth of the way through. That's how I lie to my brain about how much work is left. Speaking of stuff that's over at the website, we've already launched our draft kit for this year. Like I said, we have a best ball announcement for that draft kit coming up next week. If you head over there, you'll actually find detailed write-ups about most of the big early free agent moves from Rich Rebar, you know, Kirk Cousins, Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs. The list goes on and on. We're not going to talk about those guys today because, like I said, Rich has already covered them in the draft kit. Go and check that out and, you know, read his thoughts on all of that. What we wanted to do on this episode today was focus a little bit more on the lesser name guys, I guess, that moved in free agency. Some of them are still big name guys, but people that maybe aren't getting the attention. That said, where I want to start today is not on one of those guys. This is a guy that signed kind of after we were finished doing this every move analysis, and that is Calvin Ridley, who ended up joining the Titans. I'm fascinated by this move from the Titans. I think that, you know, if you take a real football perspective, the amount of guaranteed money they gave to a guy that's at Ridley's age is, you know, we'll see kind of how that ends up. But from a fantasy perspective, he's joining a team with DeAndre Hopkins. He's joining a team with Will Levis. I'm having a real hard time parsing how to value this situation. We have a new coach and a new offensive system that's probably going to be a lot different than what we've seen in Tennessee in the past. And so it's just an odd situation. I'd like to get your thoughts on where you stand with Calvin Ridley right now.
Yeah, I think top down, this Titan situation, I think a lot of gamers are having trouble trying to parse things out too. I think when you look at where everyone is priced in this offense, I mean, that includes the running backs too, who appear to be on the surface largely interchangeable. But I actually think that what makes this offense interesting from a top-down perspective for fantasy, especially where these guys are priced, I don't think a lot of ceiling is being priced into these guys. And, you know, granted, for good reason. The median projection and the floor projection for these guys are all pretty low. But everyone, I think, from where we're in best ball season, the upside here, I think, is largely in place for everyone to be underpriced in this offense, you know, including Will Levis. This is a team that's making a huge transition from an offense. It's not just adding Calvin Ridley. It's not adding Tony Pollard. It's losing Derrick Henry. It's losing Mike Vrabel, right? Like, this, the entire identity of this offense is going to change. This is a team that was in the bottom third of the league in drop back rate, you know, each of the past four seasons. They are the bottom of the league in terms of using three wide receivers on the field in each of the past four seasons. You know, now you're getting Brian Callahan in. You know, this is a team that aggressively threw the ball in Cincinnati. Their pass rate over expectation the past 2 years was well above league average. They're going to play three wide receivers on the field a ton. They don't have this guy in Derrick Henry. And losing Derrick Henry is going to be probably a net loss because of just what type of player he is. But also, we can now play Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard, like I said, in these 11 personnel sets. And it's kind of, on the surface, you're like, this is fun. Like, I would play with the Titans in Madden. Like, they look kind of fun. Yeah. Now, there is a lot to work to be done still here. Obviously, we have the Will Levis factor. Will Levis, one of the worst quarterbacks, you know, in the NFL in a small sample last year. He had issues coming into the NFL. He wasn't a first-round draft pick. This is not a guy that had, like, immense pedigree like a Bryce Young. Like, it's more of a situation like where the Falcons were in with Desmond Ridder a couple years ago, right, where we're trying to hope to luck box into, like, a QB value here. Only Bryce Young had a lower inaccuracy rate on throws 10 yards or further downfield than Will Levis last year. And then the offensive line still is a much-needed work in progress. I mean, they add Lloyd Cushenberry, upgrade at center, but, like, the tackles are still a problem. Will Levis was a guy who was not good under pressure in college, was not good under pressure his first year in the NFL. So there are still some things that, like, where you see, like, a house of cards, this thing doesn't work. But I do think there is some intrigue here, especially when you look at the prices of all these guys. I'm willing to at least say right now, on the surface of where gamers are treating the situation, that from a best ball stance, I'm going to be drafting some of these guys.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the price, because this is as of Monday when we updated the ADP on Sharp Football Analysis. You can find Underdog ADP there. On Monday when we updated it, Ridley was the wide receiver 36. DeAndre Hopkins was the wide receiver 42. So you're not talking about massive investments. And I think the Levis part is interesting because I mean, I've said it before, Titans fans hate me. I have watched a lot of Will Levis. I am not convinced he is a high-end starting or will be a high-end NFL starting quarterback. However, last year, if you're trying to say, what happened last year to Will Levis, and we're going to extrapolate that to his NFL career. The situation last year was awful. The offensive line was terrible. The only wide receiver he had to throw to was Hopkins. And so it wasn't a great situation. It is better now. But as you said, there are still some issues there. The thing about Levis I found really interesting is if you dig into his targets and where he's targeting people, and part of this is because of how often he was targeting DeAndre Hopkins, but 22.4% of his attempts last year were at least 20 yards down the field, which is a massive, massive number. The next closest qualified quarterback was Justin Fields at 14.6%. And so he was throwing down the field. We saw Calvin Ridley's usage change. We talked about it on this podcast, how Ridley's usage changed last year into more of a down the field receiver. As he got later into the season, his ADOT was closer to around 13 as we went on. And so, yeah, there's some interesting, like, big play, get the push the ball downfield kind of situations here based on Will Levis. Now it's a new offense. Like you said, it's going to be different. Are they going to crank up the volume enough under Callahan that we get enough targets for both of these guys who have traditionally been, you know, pretty targeted pretty heavily in their career, especially Hopkins? Those are all open questions, but I think the price component is the conversation here. They're cheap. And so if you're taking a shot on upside, you're at least taking a cheap shot on upside with both of these receivers.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I look at it. And these were guys, like you said, they got those high-calorie targets. That's going to be interesting to see how they fit together because, you know, Calvin Ridley was first in the NFL in terms of red zone target share among wide receivers. DeAndre Hopkins was fourth. Calvin Ridley was first amongst wide receivers in end zone target share. DeAndre Hopkins was third. So, like, do they cannibalize each other a little bit, especially if it's a guy like Levis where we don't know how many guys he can particularly prop up? But I think it's what makes him interesting in context of, like, you know, best ball season, you know, and I don't want to use that as a crutch of saying, like, hey, take these guys, because there probably is going to be volatility here. But I do think from a top-down perspective, everyone here looks to be a shade underpriced. And I would include the running backs.
What about Treylon? Are we pouring some out for?
I mean, listen, I'll never push back on anyone's wide receiver 90 selection. Like we've all made some.
I had a lot of Deontay Hardy last year, so we've all made some interesting late round picks. We could throw those out there, but I did dig into kind of like the target shares with different players on the field, and with Levis on the field, Hopkins was targeted on nearly 29% of Levis's official targets. But with Burks on the field and Levis on the field, Hopkins was targeted nearly 40% of the time, which I'm sure is just a wild small sample variation. But that was fascinating to me that I assumed that Burks had come back, and, you know, we had seen it change. It hadn't changed. So there you go. Nuck dominates targets. That's a story, a tale of all this time.
An eyeball test, he didn't look washed last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
he and Henry were the two clearly good players that we were watching whenever the Titans played. It was Hopkins was very clearly still, he's not DeAndre Hopkins from Houston, but he's still very clearly a good player. And that is strong competition for Ridley. And that's why you get these concerns about target share. Let's move on a little bit and talk about, I guess, let's all encompassly talk about the Steelers. The Steelers trade Deontay Johnson. I guess we can start there since that's kind of the beginning of this. The Steelers trade Deontay Johnson to the Panthers. As we'll talk about in a second, it doesn't seem like Johnson was going to be a good fit for what the Steelers might want to do on offense this season with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. He was in the last year of his contract. It made sense for him to move to the Panthers. But from his perspective, from a fantasy perspective, for specifically Deontay Johnson, what are your thoughts on kind of his situation in Carolina and how high his fantasy ceiling can really be in that offense?
Yeah, and I mean, his fantasy ceiling also is always been driven by kind of volume. Last year, he did, you know, increase his ADOT and in yards per catch, but he also had his fewest receptions per game last season, his fewest since his rookie year. But, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see how it kind of fits together with him. Obviously, it's a situation where Carolina, like, they kind of had to do this, right? Like, they didn't have, you know, they lost their first pick. Obviously, they trade out of that. You already moved DJ Moore. You look at Adam Thielen last year. There was a pretty large gap from Adam Thielen to the next highest receiver on the team in DJ Shark. And then Thielen himself was a guy who started the season off really hot and then completely kind of, you know, faded away. I mean, he had 300-yard games the opening six games of the season, went over 74 yards just once the final 11 games of the year. The final seven games of the year, Shark actually had more yards than Thielen. He's going to be 34. So, like, you know, Mingo gave them nothing, you know, as a rookie. So, like, they kind of had – this is, like, the path to least resistance of, like, adding a guy who we at least know can get open and command targets. Big picture, Deontay Johnson's only signed for this year. So, like, they still have a lot of work to be done. We talked about Thielen's age. You know, what are they going to get out of Mingo? And then what are we going to get out of Bryce Young? I mean,
yeah.
If Dave Canales can pull this out for a third year in a row, because, you know, he was part of the resurrection of Geno Smith, part of the resurrection of Baker Mayfield the past 2 years, this, it wasn't just, you look at Bryce Young versus CJ Stroud last year. Bryce Young had a historically awful rookie season. You know, since 2000, there are 63 quarterbacks that have qualified for league passer rating those seasons. His 5.5 yards per attempt ranked 56th on that list. The quarterbacks below him are Derek Carr, Chris Wankie, Blaine Gabbert, Joey Harrington, Jimmy Clausen, Kyle Orton, and Bruce Gradkowski.
Chris Wankie?
Yeah.
What a name.
Two Panthers. Two Panthers also. Jimmy Clausen, too. The only other quarterbacks to throw for fewer than 6 yards as per pass attempt as a rookie were David Carr, Josh Rosen, and Kyle Bowler added on to those guys. Like, this is not the company you want to keep. 36% success rate for Bryce Young, 53rd on that list. He's 59th in EPA per dropback on that list. Like, I mean, these are not the guys you want to keep, like, the company with, in terms of, you know, saying, like, this, we're just going to throw everything out that happened as a rookie. Because you can make easily excuses for Bryce Young, right? Like, there's no shortage. The offensive line was bad. We talked about his wide receivers. They were bad. He picked up an ankle injury in, like, week two last year. So his head coach got fired in the middle of the season. And, you know, they jostled offensive coordinator play calling duties, like, around. So, like, there's no shortage of excuses, but we could have made a lot of excuses for those other guys on that I rattled off too. It's easy to go back and say, like, in hindsight, and say, like, well, this is what happened to, you know, Blaine Gabbert year one, or this is what happened to, you know, Jimmy Clausen or all these other dudes. So, like, Bryce Young has to make a step up himself as well. So, yeah, with Deontay Johnson, I think it's still more like he's got that runway to get that volume to be kind of a floor-based asset. But he's another one of these guys, I think, that you're going to be a lot more happy when you don't have to set a weekly lineup with Deontay Johnson. Right? Like, there's just going to be weeks where, like, you miss out on the week he scores a touchdown, probably one of his six that he scores next year, or he gets over 100 yards. But there's been a lot of weeks where you just have to, like, grin and bear and probably start him in your season long leagues and take on, like, some 40 yard games. So, like, you know, some really floor games. So, like, he's another guy that probably fits that mold of, like, he probably looks underpriced now, but you probably don't want a part of that when it comes to weekly setting formats.
You've engaged my ADHD brain. I have a question for you. Chris Wankie, drafted in the year 2001, right? Drafted in the year 2001. How old do you think he is currently?
Well, he was, what, 27, 28 when he was a rookie, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was doing the math. So he's got to be approaching 50, right?
He's 51 years old. I would have never. I knew, like, you remember that he was an older prospect, but how old of a prospect he was,
That and the Whedon thing would never happen in, like, the current NFL. Like, we've got too much, like, data and too many people, like, saying, like, it's absolutely, like, the actual process, like, where age still isn't, like, a full on factor for players, but, like, it, more teams are incorporating, like, age into production, age adjusted production than ever. Like, that would never happen, the Wankie or Whedon picks. Not again. Not a million years again.
There's a picture of him on his draft day, and it's just, yeah, he looks like my dad. I love it. Currently offensive coordinator, co-offensive coordinator at Georgia Tech, according to Wikipedia. So
good for
him. Glad to hear that. Glad to hear you're doing well. On Bryce Young, I think Bryce Young is the answer to how excited we're going to be about anybody. You know, Adam Thielen had a large target share last year. He's still there. You mentioned he is older. He kind of fell off. Can Johnson get a huge target share with Thielen also there? I don't know. I mean, I think that's a fair question, but it all really comes down to Bryce Young. And you brought up a lot of the, you know, the real football stats. I thought that this was really interesting. According to PFF and their expected fantasy points model that they use, Young finished the furthest below his expected fantasy points among quarterbacks last year. It wasn't even close. He scored 61.7 fewer fantasy points than expected. Mac Jones was the second worst on that list at 33.7. So just, you know, we can talk about the offensive changes and Canales coming in. You know, are they going to throw a little bit more? You know, whatever. But just from like a base level, if Young plays better, that's 62 quarterback fantasy points that weren't there last year that could be there this year. And so I think that that is a, that's really all that matters. Can Young play better? And if he does, I think that Deontay Johnson probably is going to beat his price. Like you said, he's wide receiver 43 right now on Underdog. It's not going to, you're not going to be so terribly excited about Deontay Johnson. That's not the kind of wide receiver he is, but I bet he returns value on that. If Young gets, you know, improves, if Young doesn't improve, you know, it gets a little bit more difficult. Another kind of moving on to the Steelers, moving on to one of Deontay Johnson's old teammates, George Pickens. I'm really interested in Pickens this season, and I assume he's going to be someone I have on a lot of teams, because when I look at the Steelers, when I look at them bringing in Russell Wilson, when I look at them bringing in Justin Fields, now they have Arthur Smith as their offensive coordinator. I see an offense that is going to be, as we described with Russell Wilson last year a bunch, the James Harden offense, right? Where we're throwing balls around the line of scrimmage, we're throwing balls deep. We saw that Russell Wilson attempted just 11% of his passes in the intermediate areas of the field last year, which was the lowest rate in the league. Wilson has been throwing the ball down the field at a very high rate for several seasons now. That wasn't just a last year thing. And you look at all of that, and that really fits Pickens. That really fits what we want to get out of George Pickens. 27.9% of Pickens' career targets have come 20 yards downfield. That had been 13th among qualifying receivers last year. He showed last year he's able to create after the catch on shorter passes. He was 17th among wide receivers and yard after catch per reception when targeted 10 yards or fewer downfield last season. I see this offense, and you can tell me if you think I'm wrong on this, I see this offense being a lot of around the line of scrimmage and deep shots, and that just fits George Pickens perfectly, and he's kind of the only wide receiver on the roster right now. So I'm starting to get excited about it, and I don't know if I should be, but it's there.
I mean, George Pickens, too, also, you know, a guy, if you look at, like, ESPN's, you know, kind of, you know, metrics, was a guy that ranked really high in terms of, like, you know open score and overall grade. Last season. So it could have been more like Kenny Pickett and the offense they were in. I mean, top down, it's just the, you know, the limitations this offense are probably going to have in terms of overall volume again. Also, I don't think anyone right now expects either quarterback to play the full season.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think that we probably will see both guys end up playing at some point this year. I mean, Russell Wilson's, so we look at Russell Wilson's season last year on the surface, you're like, oh, you know, statistically, it's not bad. But then you go under the hood and it looks a lot like Carson Wentz's year before with the Colts, right? Like when Carson Wentz had the year with the Colts and you're like, hey, you know, Carson Wentz was not that bad. And then under the hood, like all its underlying metrics were horrible. That's like what Russell Wilson's season was last year with the Broncos. And that's why they are moving on with him. And I brought it up before, like every Russell Wilson offense, you know, we've done a narrative of let Russ cook for like a decade. Every Russell Wilson offense, no matter who the coordinator's been, ends up looking like the Russell Wilson offense because that's the type of player he is. Like, he's a big game hunter. He wants to push the ball down the field. He's never been like a hot read quarterback. He's always left a lot of meat on the bone on the intermediate area. And especially, like, this is why he's been such a bad third down quarterback in recent years, because he doesn't take a lot of free stuff on early downs and puts himself in these situations where he has to play hero ball. And the NFL meta has kind of moved away from that. It was when Russ was young, that stuff could thrive. And I feel like the combination of Arthur Smith plus Russell Wilson just is not going to mesh well. It's going to be a lot of, because this is a team we know, like with Arthur Smith, every stop he's been at, like there, this is not a team that from a pass rate over expectation stance is going to be high. Atlanta was last in the NFL in first down drop back rate in the NFL outside of the fourth quarter under Arthur Smith. Last year, the Steelers were 31st. Like, this is, it could be very similar, right? Like, they want to have success running the football. And I think that's what we're going to look at. So, I mean, Pickens, I think, is going to be overall fine. The overall target share, I think Pickens is a good player. I actually think he's been kind of underrated from an actual talent perspective based on his, you know, sample here of Pittsburgh. And he wasn't even bad. Like, statistically, his numbers are fine last year for a year or two player. So I mean, you're going to have some spike weeks from him. Like you said, he's the very Cortland Sutton-esque. He's going to make those amazing catches. If we look at, like, the top 10 catches from the NFL last year, Cortland Sutton probably had, like, 6 to 8 of them. And Pickens probably had three or four of them. So, like, it'll probably be like the same thing where he's making like sick catches because that's the type of player he is. And but they, you said target share wise, this is a team outside beyond George Pickens. There's not a lot here. We expected the Steelers to draft a guy, but it's wide open for George Pickens to have a high target share perspective, but probably not run a lot of routes.
So over the last, this is always interesting to me, you talk about pass rate over expected. Over the last two seasons, the Falcons have two of the four lowest pass rates over expected in the league, including 13.7% under expected in 2022. Now, obviously, they didn't have a great quarterback situation, and quarterback situation does tend to drive this a little bit, but it is, you know, it is fascinating. We know what we're getting here, and you're right. Volume there is the concern, and that's why specifically, if we want to talk about the quarterback value, that's why it's going to be very hard to get excited about Russell Wilson. Because although he bounced back as a rusher last year, I think he averaged 3-point-something rushing fantasy points per game. He doesn't have that massive rushing upside you're going to need in an offense that is likely to be as run heavy as this offense is going to be, especially because we expect the Steelers defense to once again be pretty good. This team always is fine under Mike Tomlin. Obviously, we're going to be close to 500. It's not going to be in a bunch of negative game scripts or big negative game scripts likely. And so from a fantasy perspective, I think it would be more exciting for us if Field starts and we could get, you know, that running, but it just doesn't seem like that's what's going to happen early in the season. So I think both players will play. My guess right now is that Russell Wilson starts week one and starts for a decent amount of the season. Is that kind of where you are? Do you think it's going to be, you think there's a better chance for Fields than me, or where you stand on that?
No, I think that a team like the Steelers, in the context of the Steelers, is going to side with probably the veteran player they perceive to be safer between the two. You know, what's interesting is I wrote about last year in the Dynasty tiers that there was not one player I was more concerned about from a Dynasty aspect than Justin Fields. And no player has had their Dynasty value plummet more this offseason than Justin Fields. So... I mean, it's real tough, man. But like these quarterbacks that in the current, like I said, you know, we keep bringing up like the defensive and offensive current meta, like where the NFL's play. Like if you don't have a quick game right now as a quarterback, man, it's tough. And it's real tough way to live. And that's just going to be interesting to see what happens with Jaden Daniels and his development, who looks very eerily in terms of overlap to me entering the NFL, like Justin Fields, in terms of lack of quick game, playing in just a real cushy environment where he didn't have to be pressed to do a lot of NFL things at LSU. And then still ate a ton of sacks. So like I'm very concerned too. So like, while I'm very excited for Jaden Daniels' fantasy upside, I'm also very leery, especially in context of this class. If you're in super flex leagues, you're going to have to bypass some really elite wide receiver talents versus the top six super flex picks in Dynasty this year, I think are very, very intriguing, because typically we want to take that currency. Quarterbacks in super flex leagues are just currency. These guys hold and retain value like their first couple years in the league. Like even a guy like Zach Wilson held his yearly value, you know, into year two, into year three. But like you're going to pass up Marvin Harrison, you're going to pass up Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze for like some guys that maybe don't get second contracts as quarterbacks. And that's, I think it's going to be really interesting in dynasty drafts this year.
I can't find the tweet, but there was a really interesting tweet. I'll try to find it and retweet it, about college scramble rate out of a clean pocket. And it's first of all, very good for Caleb Williams, if you look at that. And it's maybe not so good for some of the other ones. So that's something definitely to pay attention with Jaden Daniels. By the way, your pre-draft rankings are up on sharpfootballanalysis.com as well, also part of the draft kit, which I would recommend reading. The wide receiver one checked in at 13,000 words. So anything you want to know about the wide receiver class, Rich has you covered. I promise you on that. Let's talk a bit about the running backs here that moved. I'm fascinated by Zach Moss moving to the Bengals. The Bengals obviously moved on to move Joe Mixon to the Texans in a trade. Mixon taking over for Devin Singletary. I don't really think we need to talk about that situation because, I mean, Mixon offers more as a receiver, but I mean, Mixon and Devin Singletary at this point are very similar running backs. And it was hard for me to find an interesting thing to talk about with Mixon, but I am interested in Moss because of this situation. He signed a $4 million average annual value contract, $8 million over 2 years. That ranks 19th among running backs, tied with Jamal Williams, so it's not a huge investment. We think a lot about Zach Moss having a good year last year, and I think he had a good year, but it was just, you look at kind of the underlying metrics, it's not great among 68 running backs with at least 50 carries. Moss was 27th in EPA per rush, 27th in explosive run rate, and 42nd in negative run rate. I think Moss and Mixon are probably very similar running backs at this point in their careers. And to me, that's kind of good news for Chase Brown. Of course, I might just be selling myself Chase Brown stock. It'll all matter. The only thing that's really going to matter probably in this backfield is who ends up with the goal line touches. Mixon used to get a ton of those. He's gotten a ton of them for the last several years. That maybe Zach Moss, maybe that's where they're going to use him. But I look at this situation, and I think people have said, oh, this is a big negative for Chase Brown. Ultimately, he's getting a Mixon-esque, I think, running back coming into the situation. And to me, that it could have been a lot worse for him. And I still think I am bullish on Chase Brown. But talk me out of that.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any reason to be like, you know, in terms of draft structure, like if you're drafting wide receivers heavy and you're looking to tack on like running backs that have kind of that upside through an injury, he's going to be one of the guys that are higher on the list for that type of team build. I do think that Zach Moss is extremely undervalued, and I think he fits those builds as well because of where he's currently going after those, because he's on a veteran team. We've been here like so many times with this type of thing. Like Zach Moss is going to play, and he's going to play a lot, and he's going to play in a situation with the best offense that he's been attached to probably since his last year in Buffalo. You look at Joe Mixon and his opportunities he's gotten in terms of, like we talk about, like those high calorie opportunities, like
we don't call them that anymore, Rich. You've already forgotten. We call these the full fat.
They're just rich with fantasy fat. Like if you look at like, because you're someone that likes to look at like the expected points, like Joe Mixon has been one of the worst running backs in terms of converting his expected points. He gets all of these high value touches. Also, like this is a seamless scheme fit. Mixon was second in the NFL in runs out of shotgun last year. Zach Moss was fourth. He's going to slide right in. The interesting thing here is that Chase Brown wasn't good last year. He had some explosive plays.
He had big runs.
He had big runs, but there's a reason why he didn't extend his opportunities, because he was bad at the nitty-gritty stuff as a rookie. And he's a rookie, small sample. He's going to get more opportunities this year. But, I mean, 81st in success rate. He kind of just relied on those big plays. I think a guy like Zach Moss on a veteran team that is playing to win is going to just be a guy that plays a lot more snaps. He's going well outside of RB30 right now. Like, this is a guy
that's 35. Yeah.
I mean, he's going to get a ton of scoring opportunities. And also, when you look at, I actually think his receiving work has a chance to be better than people undersell, because Mixon's probably a better overall receiver, but the Bengals didn't have Mixon doing a lot of things that required like a high litmus test above just baseline performance. Like he caught a lot of checkdowns. Like he was not out here lining up and running like double moves or anything, like, right, like getting slot targets. So I think Moss is capable of catching checkdowns too as well. So I think his receiving value is going to be better than his. I think people are just scared off of the initial look at like Chase Brown being the next thing. But Chase Brown has no draft capital. We've done this with other Bengals running backs of past, dude, like Chris Evans and Travion Williams.
You say we did this. I didn't do that.
Individually.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, I look at Zach Moss's current ADP, his current opportunity in an offense, and I'm like, it's just way too low. And granted, there's some fragility there, but like, it's not priced in right now. If I have to take Zach Moss at RB20, the conversation becomes different. Taking Zach Moss at RB35, I feel like it's an auto smash right now.
Yeah, and I agree 100% with that. When I'm talking about, I'm keeping the light on for Chase Brown because I think that there's a better chance for him with Moss than there would have been if they really added, like, if they had added Aaron Jones, then we're out. Like, we're completely out. I think there's at least a chance here for him with Moss.
I didn't even realize he's going ahead of Moss still.
Oh, is he still going ahead of Moss?
Unbelievable.
All right, never mind. I changed my mind. I'll take Zach Moss. I think the biggest point here, and you mentioned it with expected points, Joe Mixon led all running backs in goal-to-go carries last season.
And what about
he was third among all running backs in goal-to-go carries in 2022. Yep. He was fourth in 2021. It seems to me that Moss is the most likely to get those carries among these two, and those are the carries that matter for fantasy. Those are the full fat, the tallow carries for fantasy football. And so that's what matters. What I will say, though, I mean, Moss has a 40% success rate on go-to-go carries throughout his career. That's not great. He only has 48 of them, so it's a small sample, but, you know, they're not really that much different in size, so maybe we're overselling Moss there. But I think in general we're in agreement about Moss and his role, but I'm at least leaving the light on here for Chase Brown. And yeah. That wouldn't be the case, like I said, if someone like Aaron Jones ended up there.
Yeah, I think he fits a lot of specific builds where you would take a shot on the upside of Zach. Listen, and Zach Moss has never been like a full-fledged like NFL starter where he's commanded a lot of touches. So that leaves the light on for a guy like Chase Brown, especially through injury. You know, a running back injury at that, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
To get to 200 touches.
We're saying this by week six, Travion Williams is going to be the clear starter. I think they re-signed him, right? Am I right about that?
That Chase Brown is the, like, especially when you go under the hood and look at like his draft investment and like how he performed, that like he's a guy that like so many people are like that bullish on to the degree they are for fantasy. Because we've been way more excited about a lot better looking players than Chase Brown that didn't get the opportunity.
Oh, yeah, because Chase Brown's beautiful. I'm one of them, so I can't say anything about it. I love that guy. I thought he fell in the draft further than he should. I really love that guy. But you're right. It wasn't great, his rookie season. We remember the big plays. The down-to-down consistency just wasn't there, and that's certainly something he's going to have to improve if he's going to do that. I want to move on here to Gus Edwards, which we've got a little bit of a – we're recording this on Thursday, March the 28th, if you're listening to this, you know, after that. And I was much more excited about Gus Edwards until I woke up to the news that the Chargers are going to have a visit with J.K. Dobbins. And now I'm like, oh, my, we're going back. We're going back into the hell of Ravens pass with Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. I mean, Gus Edwards, what he's done every time he's been given a chance has been good throughout his career. I thought he was going to get a chance here with the Chargers. He still very well might. And we know what he was able to do with Greg Roman in the past. He averaged 5.1 yards per carry over his three seasons. He missed one of the seasons with Roman, but over his three seasons with Greg Roman, runs the football. He has 10 years as an offensive coordinator. His team has finished top 12 in running back rushing yards in 8 of those 10 seasons. All of this is really, really good for Gus Edwards with Jim Harbaugh running that whole thing. But I mean, if another back comes in here, if it's not a rookie, if a rookie comes in, you know, the rookie class isn't great, I'm not going to be that worried. But if J.K. Dobbins comes in, even coming off all of his injuries, then I think things become a little bit more dicey here for Edwards.
Yeah, and Edwards, as good as a player he's been from an efficiency stance, you know, obviously has been a guy that's been aided by having, you know, not a ton of volume and then getting the kind of, you know, types of runs that can kind of like breed that efficiency. Like, because he has efficiency on the surface, you're like, oh, like Gus Edwards has like Nick Chubby and like efficiency, yeah, but also never has had Nick Chubb type of volume. Like, you last year he set a career high with 210 touches. So like he's never been like a high touch guy, but we know what Gus Edwards is. He's effective at the role that he's been given, and he can be, especially in this Greg Roman offense. We know they're going to run the football, dude. Like there are teams that like try to hide what they're going to do, and there are teams that don't care. Like they're going to let, and Jim Harbaugh doesn't care, man. Like he's letting you know. Like think of like NFL off season like an amusement park, right? Like we're waiting outside to get into the amusement park, and like what ride are we going to go to first, right? Are we going to hit the giant roller coaster? What are we going to hit? And immediately the Chargers did when free agency opened, they signed Gus Edwards, they signed Will Disley, and they signed Bradley Bozeman. Like there is no damn secret like then, what this offense
and then they cut do. Mike Williams and they traded away Keenan Allen. At the coaches meeting this week, Jim Harbaugh said that offensive linemen are the most important players on the team. There is no doubt about where we're headed. There is no smoke screen.
100%.
They're drafting Joe Alt at 5 or trading down. They're not drafting a wide receiver. You can get that out of your mocks. They are taking an offensive lineman, and that's all you need to know about the Chargers and what they want to do.
Yeah, this team is going to run the hell out of the football. I mean, you look at when Harbaugh and Roman were together that tenure for those 4 years with the 49ers. I mean, they were 30th in the NFL in dropback rate, 31st in passing plays per game. I mean, it's going to be sad to see them turn Justin Herbert into fully like turn him into the Alex Smith. But like, man, it is completely happening. And I assume we assume like a rookie probably joins this roster at some point. Even if they sign a guy like Dobbins, I still think they end up taking another running back for the fourth
year. They draft Blake Corum for sure. Corum is a future Charger if I've ever seen one.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's still a lot to be written, I think, with this backfield. And that's probably why there's some trepidation, probably with the ADP of Gus Edwards and some prognostications are just like leaves the door open where gamers are kind of like 1 foot in, 1 foot out. But I mean, definitely Edwards has a chance, even with the rookie or the addition of Dobbins, to be that thumper and again, fall in line to get those types of high value touches that we kind of look for in these specific, especially these specific builds. Like we're in best ball season and we're looking to take on some of these running backs, like especially I know the way you play and I play, like we're taking on, 3 to 4 of these running backs that go RB 30 or later. And guys that have access to like those types of touchdowns or like those types of touches are guys you're just willing to add to those types of builds.
And Edwards, and I think this is really important when you're talking about those players, because I think that sometimes people get excited about players that require an injury in front of them to make it work. And that is less interesting to me in this kind of range than players that the upside is there. We just don't know exactly how the situation is going to work out. Gus Edwards could just be, I mean, the GM has already called him the bell cow back. Gus Edwards could just get 15 carries a game for this team without anything changing on the depth chart. He could just get 15 carries for this team, be their touchdown scorer, and annihilate his ADP. And those are the kind of backs that I want to target in this area. I don't want to have to bet on injury. I don't want to have to bet on a high upside, backup. I don't want to have to bet on this year's version of Tyjae Spears, hoping that Derrick Henry gets hurt. I want to bet on somebody that has that path without injury. And Gus Edwards is definitely in that realm. And I think he makes a lot of sense there.
Yeah, he looks a lot
any other running backs?
Like Brian Robinson, like how Brian Robinson last year was, right? Like Brian Robinson was a guy, like no one was particularly excited to draft him. His ADP wasn't necessarily high, but we knew that he was at least at worst case scenario going into the season with Antonio Gibson, like the 1B, right? And that's like what the situation probably Gus Edwards has. Like even if they add a guy, like he's at worst going to be splitting with a player and then has an inline to the touches we already want, like Brian Robinson had last year. And then you just need the luck box factor of like, what if this guy catches a few more passes than we thought, right? What if he's just, he runs into some hot games and that's what you have. And that's like I said, when you're looking for like, when you're drafting wide receiver heavy, like that's what you look for in terms of like what you're looking to add on to your roster. Not necessarily when we're talking about like zero RB or taking a hodgepodge of running backs that need like multiple doors kicked down for them to even get an opportunity. Like, and I think that's where some people lose kind of focus when they do roster builds like that. They take too many running backs that need to hit their like home run outcome ceiling, right? Like they need two injuries or an injury to like get touches. You can just take guys in that format that have that locked in role. They may not, that already, then you get that upside just inherently through them running more pure on the opportunity that they already have instead of just needing like all these injuries. Like they said, like you said, like the Tyjae Spears factor of last year.
Yeah. I mean, Kyren Williams kind of fits that mold, right? If we're talking about kind of the same situation, if we're looking at these hits, oftentimes, they had Cam Akers, obviously, but we had questions about Cam Akers. And so I think that that kind of back is who I'm targeting. We're going to have to move on. We have a few more running wide receivers to talk about. I do want to make mentions of Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones, obviously a much bigger name than some of the running backs we've talked about. I want to make clear to everybody how good Aaron Jones was when healthy last season, because I think there might be a little bit of, oh, Aaron Jones is, you know, he's older. Maybe he had hit the cliff or something like that. Aaron Jones, when he was healthy last year, was wild. I mean, in week one, he had 127 total yards and 2 touchdowns before the injury. He rushed for 5.7 yards per carry over his final 5 games, including the playoffs. He recorded an explosive run on 15.4% of his carries in the playoffs. He scored 3 touchdowns against the Cowboys. Obviously, remember that. Aaron Jones was still Aaron Jones when healthy last year, and that is a massive upgrade for what we've seen with the Vikings in recent years. And so he doesn't have as much competition for, like, we saw A.J. Dillon take a lot of those short yardage carries, which, by the way, watch out, Josh Jacobs, A.J. Dillon's back. Maybe they're going to keep using him in those roles. But he's not going to have a lot of that. I mean, I'm so excited. I'm an Aaron Jones truther and Aaron Jones fanboy. Take this for what it's worth. But I'm so excited about his landing spot. And I think he's actually – the Vikings' offensive line probably not as bad as you think based on how bad their running game has been. I don't know. I'm all in on Aaron Jones.
Well, the Packers' offensive line wasn't good last year. They were one of the most beleaguered, injured offensive lines in the NFL last year, and Aaron Jones had that production that, you know, came later in the year. I wish the price was a little bit lower on Aaron Jones. You know, he's kind of falling into that RB dead zone still. So, like, you know,
that hurts.
So we'll see. I mean, there's a lot to be written with the NFL draft and kind of shoring up what these actual depth charts look like. But yeah, unfortunately right now he's going in a spot where I'm just really not taking running backs, but I do come out. Like, I think when you look at like that pocket of running backs though, that have moved, I do think he's probably the more intriguing of the guy, the non Saquon guys, right? Like that next tier of guys. Like, I think even Mixon, I'm more interested in Aaron Jones being kind of the lead running back for the Vikings than Mixon being the lead running back for the Texans, which on the surface may sound kind of not is appealing, but I do think that there's a lot more opportunity for Aaron Jones to catch a lot of passes, still not really have any competition. Like you said, like, that's a situation where probably they only had a rookie. Like, we'll see if Damian Pierce can fight back in year 3. A lot of these disappointing running backs from last year, I'm really curious, like, this ADP, like Chuba Hubbard's ADP to Miles Sanders looks like really off. Like, what if Miles Sanders was just hurt like all year? And like this is like they can't get out of his contract yet. So like he's going to have an opportunity. Miles Sanders going 20 running back slots after Chuba Hubbard seems very egregious to me. You know, there's just like all these things for these running backs that, because efficiency tends to have a lot more variance at the running back position than at wide receiver. So like a lot of these running backs that were that bad last year, I'm willing to keep the door open on them to bounce back and like have some more opportunity this year than maybe the field is letting on right now.
Sanders, an example of that kind of back we're talking about, where you don't need injury. You don't need a bunch of doors to open up for Miles Sanders. He could just be the starter in week 1 without anything changing. And so there we are. How excited you are about that on the Panthers, I don't know. We'll see. About the Vikings offense, one more thing on the Vikings offense. You know, we were obviously very worried about who's going to be the starting quarterback there for good reason. But that offense was still fine with, like, Nick Mullins at quarterback. I think Kevin O'Connell, he's getting to be that offensive coordinator that I'm just going to trust. And I'm going to trust his offenses. And so they're not going to be – If they're starting Sam Darnold, I'm not going to expect them to be like a top 12 offense, but I don't think they're going to be like a bottom 5 offense either. So I'm not as worried about the offensive situation there. I want to get into, we're running out of time here. I want to talk about a few wide receivers. I think the Marquise Brown signing for the Chiefs is very interesting. I don't know how good it is for his fantasy value because, I mean, we saw at the end of last year, Rashee Rice take off. We obviously have Travis Kelce there. Those two guys were accounting for like 50% of the targets by the end of the year. But with Brown, what he's getting is an offense that's going to throw a lot more than any other offense that he's ever played in, and a quarterback that is a lot better than what he played with in Arizona and is a better passer than, you know, Lamar Jackson when he was playing with him in Baltimore. And so I think that we could see Marquise Brown we're going to see him take a target share dip. I don't know how much his targets are going to dip, and I think those targets are going to be better, and I think he might get used a little bit more down the field. Ultimately, I think this is a good thing for Marquise Brown, even if he ends up third on the target pecking order in Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, and you're talking about, you know, we're bringing up cost on these players. Like Hollywood Brown is at a price. Definitely, it's an F around and find out situation at wide receiver.
Wide receiver 41 for definitely, a deep threat with the Mahomes. Yeah,
especially like that. Guys he's going after. Like, you know, I think he definitely he holds a lot more intrigue than me to the number of guys that he goes after. And then what he does for this offense, though, in general, I think is, like you said, the most appealing part of it. You know, you look at since Hollywood Brown entered the league, his average touchdown length is 23.5 yards. The only players to score as many touchdowns as Hollywood Brown with a higher average yardage per touchdown are Tyreek Hill, A.J. Brown, and Ja'Marr Chase. Since Tyreek Hill left the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes last year averaged 9.5 yards per touchdown pass. Only Bryce Young averaged fewer yards per touchdown pass than Patrick Mahomes. In 2022, it was 12.2 yards. That was 29th in the league. What Hollywood Brown's addition does is just add a more viable downfield target because he is a guy that is – he's just a better player than Marcus Valdes-Scantling. he just is, you know. Marquise Brown, you know, as much of a disappointment he's been to gamers, he has still given us pockets the past 2 years of production. Obviously, the front half of 2022, he was really good, got hurt, disappeared. Last year kind of did the same thing, was solid playing with Josh Dobbs, the opening, you know, 5 weeks of the season, and then just disappeared kind of the remainder of the year again. So I'm still going to find out, like, at his price, especially the guy attached to Patrick Mahomes, you know, what if, you know, Rashee Rice. I'll say this. I'm a lot more interested in Hollywood Brown at wide receiver 40 than I probably am at Rashee Rice at wide receiver 15 or wherever he's going at right now. So that's probably how I'll be playing it. And without even being down on Rashee Rice, the player, to see what happens there. So, yeah, I think what he does for the offense is better. But wide receiver 40, sure, man. Sure.
Yeah, no, we'll take it. This has been the Raymond's Dynasty team section of the podcast with Aaron Jones and Marquise Brown. I didn't realize that that's what I was doing, but that is the dynasty teams are heavy into those two players. So I could be wish casting a little bit here with both of them as well. I want to finish up here with the Jaguars and their situation now that Calvin Ridley is gone. I want to make mention though that you should be subscribed to the Sharp Football Analysis newsletter, Sharp Football Analysis YouTube. You get notifications for when we go live. You can come in here and ask us questions if you want to. The newsletter gets you all of our content. We have a ton of content that's going to be coming out over the next month for the draft. Make sure you do that over at sharpfootballanalysis.com, or you can click the link in the bottom in the description, and it's there. Speaking of the Jaguars here, as my voice starts to go for some odd reason, I'm going to let you go on it. But kind of where do they go here with Calvin Ridley and gone? I mean, it seems to me that they brought in Gabe Davis to replace Zay Jones under the assumption that Calvin Ridley would be back. That, to me, makes the most sense of why they were signing Gabe Davis. Now Ridley's gone. Your top three wide receivers are Davis, Jones, and Christian Kirk, or in my dreams, Parker Washington, a Penn State legend. But, you know, that's the kind of receivers we're talking about. Are they going to dip into the draft and end up with maybe more of a traditional wide receiver one than the guys that they have? Are we going to see, you know, the reemergence of Christian Kirk, who, by the way, his targets really didn't go down a ton last year. It was that his targets in the end zone went down a ton because, as you mentioned before, Calvin Ridley got a bunch of those. If Calvin Ridley's gone, is Kirk back now? Are we going to get to see the 2022 version of Christian Kirk? There are a lot of questions here with this receiving game. So how do you see this situation right now?
Yeah, definitely another situation where you look at the price of all these guys and everyone's trying to figure out kind of what they're going to do. We talked about the targets, like the awesome kind of high value targets that Ridley leaves behind, Calvin Ridley leaves behind. And we know Gabe Davis can at least fill that role, right? Like Gabe Davis can get a bunch of end zone targets. Like that we know. Where Gabe Davis, just like this unit, I don't see how like these guys fit together as pieces though, because you look at Jaguars where they really struggled last year and where it hurt Trevor Lawrence was they were 31st in the NFL in yards created after the catch, a percentage of yardage gained after the catch. Only the Titans were worse than the Jaguars. And that's not Gabe Davis's game. They don't have any of those guys. Like their yak guy on offense is Evan Engram. Like, that's it, man. Like, so, like, the pieces really don't fit together on the surface. I think it is trouble for, you know, kind of Trevor Lawrence, like, everyone kind of waiting for Trevor Lawrence to, like, make that next step. It looked like towards the end of 2022 we were going to have it. Last year we didn't get it. There is, like, some weird dichotomy that, like, Trevor Lawrence is, like, an actual bad quarterback going on. Like, he's getting, like, the Herbert zone now treatment.
There was a tweet that said, what if, like, Caleb Williams ends up being the next Trevor Lawrence? And I was like, he'd be the best Bears quarterback in 20. Like, I don't, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
A great year last year, but he's still fine. Like, he's still an average NFL quarterback at worst. Like, we're still okay.
Yeah. Yeah. This isn't a situation where he's like an all-time bust, right? Like that's it. But the problem is, like, we've talked about on the other podcast at Warren, is like, now we've missed the rookie year window with Trevor Lawrence, like, where they're going to have to extend him, and he's going to get an extension, you know, a very pricey extension as well.
So they'll pick up his fifth year option and they will extend him. There's no question about that.
How do they continue to get this better? And I just don't love the way the pieces fit here from like a way I would want to deploy my wide receivers. So I do think that Kirk becomes the most interesting guy, because, like you said, like, I just think he's the best all-around wide receiver out of these players. So, like, I just lean towards, you know, playing it through the Kirk angle. I think it's good for Evan Engram to retain a lot of high targets, because, like I said, he is their yard after the catch generator in this offense. And it's really wild to say that that's your tight end. That's where I think this thing probably falls apart for them again, big picture. But like you said, they're probably banking on being in the running, or at least having high odds for retaining Calvin Ridley, and that kind of fell through for them. So I just lean towards, I'm going to probably take Kirk the most out of all these guys and play it that way.
They are picking in, this is spot 17. They're not going to get any of the top three wide receivers, but that could be like a Brian Thomas Jr. spot. And if that's who they end up getting, then I don't know, suddenly this thing makes a little bit more sense. And so I think that this is as it stands right now, I'm most interested in Christian Kirk. I think we could see him get back to more of that usage in 2022. But like you said, Gabe Davis, he could certainly be used in and around the end zone as well. But Zay Jones was used in those areas in 2022. And, you know, Kirk got a lot of those targets. He had 7.3 expected touchdowns. It was 2.9 last year. And so we could see him get more touchdowns. I'm going to be more excited about Christian Kirk. But this is incomplete, because I would not be shocked if that first round pick from the Jaguars is one of the second tier of wide receivers who this year, that second tier of wide receivers are very good. And so that's kind of what I expect to happen here. And at that point, it, you know, it really changes the calculus for what we're doing with these Jaguars wideouts. There are lots of names we didn't get to. You know, Jerry Jeudy got traded. And then given a massive contract, Rich, which,
but his contract under the hood, like, doesn't, like, there's, like, his cap hits the next 3 years are $5 million, $8 million, and $9 million. Like, it's almost, kind of,
so they Saints'd it. Yeah, I hadn't looked at it that deep.
They
Saints'd his contract.
Yeah, it's like all into bonuses and stuff too. So, like, you know, on the surface, it was probably jarring to a lot of people to see, like, Jerry Jeudy signed a 3 year, $52 million contract extension, but it's like the money is kind of dispersed all around. I will say, I mean, another guy, like, he's a sound and fury all-star, Jerry Jeudy to T. Yeah. Like, I'm not necessarily going to be, like, extremely excited to draft him where he's going, but I mean, no one wants to hear this, but, like, Deshaun Watson is undervalued. I mean, the full games Deshaun Watson played last year, he was completely fine for fantasy football, and the offense is
rushing.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, because they're rushing, the offense is better on paper potentially. I mean, and he's going so low. I mean, you got to do it, man. No one wants to do it. If you don't, honestly, if you're just out on him as a human and you don't draft him, I'm not going to push back on that. But, like, he's undervalued from a fantasy stance.
They gave Jerry Jeudy 4 void years. I hadn't gone through and looked at the specific of the contract. 4 void years.
And he's only under contract technically through age 28. So it's like, it's all, like,
on the surface. After 2026.
On the surface,
so there you go.
It's more jarring than I think. And that's all NFL contracts, right? Like, everyone always gets up in arms over NFL contracts. Then you look at the real contract, what it really is, and you're like,
He is getting $19 million in cash this year and $16 million in cash next year. Good for you, Jerry Jeudy. I'm glad that you got paid. All right, that's it for us. That's all. Make sure, like I said at the top, we're going to have a ton of podcasts coming up, a ton of content on the website, Sharp Football Analysis. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel, the podcast, the newsletter, so you can check all that out. Remember, our draft kit is running. Like I said, we're going to have a best ball announcement next week for a new something we're adding to the draft kit that I think is very interesting. We'll actually talk with Todd Burrows about it on the podcast next Monday. So make sure you check that out. You can find all of Rich's pre-draft work on his rookies. You can find his in-depth reaction, like we said at the top, some of the bigger names, Saquon, Derrick Henry, all of that's in the draft kit. Make sure you check it out, and we'll be back to talk with you real soon.